Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Late Flag, the aftermatch podcast for the LFC Red Poets. I'm your host, Les Lawson, and tonight I'm joined by Pete Warburton and Ben Kent. Tom Keegan sends his apologies as he has a virus tonight, so he's on the sick list. So, lads, I'll start with you, Pete. Just after 5 o'clock, the team drops and was a little bit stronger than you expected.
Yeah, I think it was, to be honest, lads. I thought maybe Bobby Clark might have made the start. I thought maybe one of the other kids, possibly Louis Kumas or McConnell, might have got a start. But yeah, it was stronger than I thought. I thought maybe Kostas might have started at left back. And I wasn't too sure if Connor would have started the game at right back. But yeah, it was a little bit stronger than I thought. But I think that was showing Sparta some respect, because after all, they are top of their league. And, you know, it may not be the strongest league in Europe, but if anyone's top of their own division, they need to be, you know, a force to be reckoned with. And I was talking to our Jack pre-kickoff, and he said, these are really good on the break, you know, Dad. He said, they tore Galatasaray to pieces just by breaking all the time. So I think Jürgen's done his homework on that, and he played a relatively strong side from the start, yeah.
What did you reckon, Ben? Was it stronger than you expected? It certainly was, you know, a little bit stronger than I expected. Like Pete, I thought there might be, you know, a bit of a choice between Gomez and Bradley to start. And again with Dibu and Virgil. But I did think that Kostas would have started at left back instead of Robbo. And I thought McAllister might have had the rest tonight. So I don't know what you think.
It was miles stronger than I thought it was going to be. I didn't think we'd see McAllister start. I thought he would be rested, maybe play the last 20 minutes for Sunday. And I agree with you on Kostas. Although I did think that Robbo might start just for minutes, but I didn't think he would play as much as what he did. And yeah, I wouldn't have been surprised if Bobby Clark or McConnell started. Sorry, I'm just watching Rangers score the goal. So yeah, it was a lot stronger than I was expecting, Les, yeah.
Pete, it was a real sort of quick start from Liverpool. You know, in the first 5 minutes, you know, Darwin had the chance to score, and I think to be fair to Darwin, I think Luis Diaz got in his way and put him off a little bit, which is why he wasn't able to get his attempt on goal. And then brilliant work by McAllister, you know, and he won the penalty. To me, he is a penalty taker. No doubt, the way he took that penalty, he's a penalty taker and not a player who takes penalties, if you see what the distinction is. So for me now, if we get a penalty and both him and Salah are on the field, I think McAllister's got to take the penalty. I don't know what you think. That's a little bit of a side issue. But what did you make of the start?
It was a really good start. As I say, you know, you have to respect Sparta for the position they're in. But yeah, we made a good start. And like you say, I think the Nunes chance, the first one, I think it was Diaz got in his way, and when he comes to shoot with his left foot, it was just nothing behind it. But yeah, we started well. And then obviously, I think it was 7 minutes, wasn't it, when we got the penalty, and it was a bit of a rash challenge so early in the game. I think Maka was actually not running away from goal as such, but he certainly wasn't bearing down on goal. And I think if the lad had just stood his ground and stood him up, he'd have been all right. But he was quicker to the ball, and once the lad had committed, that was it. And it was, like you say, it was a very good penalty. I don't know if he saw the keeper. The keeper really committed himself one way. I don't know if McAllister saw that, or he was just so intent on burying it in the side net, in which he did. It was right in the side. And really, if you're going to place a penalty that far into the corner, there's not many keepers who can keep them out, to be honest. It's normally past them before they can get there. So yeah, it was a really good start, and as I say, you wanted it to, you know, to settle us down. But as I said to you before we came on, it was a bit like a basketball game at times. It was end to end, but it was a fantastic start anyway, and it's one that's, you go away from Europe and it's a partisan crowd and they were all up for it. I mean, you know, they were singing the full 90 minutes regardless of any score lines. So yeah, it was good to get a bit of early control in the game.
As Pete said there, Ben, you know, it was a really good start. I like your views on the penalty. I thought it was a really good penalty by Maka. I noticed that after Darwin missed the last one, Maka wasn't giving him the ball this time. You know, when he showed how a penalty should be taken, in my opinion. But, you know, they always say, don't you, when you go away in Europe, get an early goal and quieten the crowd. Well, we got the early goal, but it didn't actually quieten the crowd, did it, Ben?
It was never going to quiet that crowd. I mean, it was a not once in a lifetime experience for them, because I don't want to belittle them that way. The top of the league, they're obviously doing well, but it was a massive occasion for them, wasn't it? And I don't think anything was going to ruin it for them. And fair play to them, it was a good atmosphere. McAllister for the penalty, I think you know my opinion of him. He's just a brilliant player. He won it, didn't he? It was a clear penalty. Why VAR even had to look at it, I've got no idea. But one of my memories of McAllister when he was at Brighton was a penalty in the last, it's about the 95th, 96th minute last season against United. And it was 0-0, I think, or 1-1 at the time. And anyway, he scored it. It was a brilliant penalty in the top corner. He absolutely
Yeah, that was
it.
The, I'm sure that was the midweek after the semi-final, Ben.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. It was after they lost them, wasn't it? At
Wembley. Yeah.
And it was a brilliant penalty. And that day, I remember watching him and thinking, he's a bloody good player, him. But anyway, sidetracked a little bit there. He is a penalty taker, Les. I agree with you. Whereas I think a lot of our players aren't. They take penalties. They're not penalty takers. McAllister looks... I mean, it's early days, isn't it? It's his first one for the club, but he took it well. I wasn't worried about it when he was on his run-up. So, yeah, it was a great penalty. And we could have been 2 or 3 up within 10 minutes, really. It was a good start.
Yeah, they kept bouncing back, though, didn't they, Pete? And,
yeah.
And you know, Kells had to be on his game. You know, defensively, I don't think we were quite at it. In fact, as a team defensively, not just blaming the, you know, the defenders here, I just thought as a team, they were a little bit off. Now, whether they had a little bit of their mind focused on Sunday and thought that, you know, the way this team played, we would always get chances, so we'll win the game anyway, so we'll play like an open game. But that was like probably one of the most open games we've seen, you know, this season. You know, for Liverpool, where it's just gone, you know, end to end, and had very little control of that game until about maybe 60, 65 minutes in the second half. Now, whether at that point they'd run themselves out or not, immediately after we'd gone one goal up, like they really sort of come at us with pace and left themselves open as well, which was giving us opportunities. But yeah, so what did you make of their sort of offensive game? And did you agree with me when I was saying about it was a team collective thing that was causing us problems and not just the defence, and Kells was right on his mettle?
Yeah. Well, like I said, prior to kickoff, I was talking with our Jack, and he was saying how good this Sparta side are on the break. And then you go a goal up early on, and you think, I mean, I said to our Jack, in days of yore, I said, we'd go one up away from home, and that's the game done. We win it 1-0 or 2-0. I said, but this one, and I likened it to a basketball game. And we still kept playing very high, like a high line, the back four. And he said, Dad, they're too good to play against that. He said, I've seen them before. And he said, the masters at the break, you know, breaking on the counter. So, yeah, there was a few hairy moments before we got the second. As you say, Kelleher made a couple of good saves. Joe Gomez cleared one off the line as well from a Kelleher save. And you could just tell that there was goals in it whatever way you went. I mean, we looked threatening when we went forward, and they looked threatening as well. And they missed a couple of chances as well. But I think they were they were architects of their own downfall at times. They were trying to play out from the back and they were getting caught quite easily. And I think that's how we got the penalty. And I think it's also how it set up the Darwin's first goal, although it was all his own work eventually. But they seem to get caught in areas of the pitch that the manager must have been tearing his hair out, you know. But it made for an exciting game, like, you know, I think he said in commentary. If you're a neutral watching this, you wanted to go on all night because it was such an end-to-end game. But yeah, I think the old days of going away from home, getting a goal and then killing the game off, they died in the 60s and 70s, I think.
What did you make though, Pete, of our defensive setup today? Do you think it was more a case of, as I said, you know, they didn't work together as a team like they normally do, you know, to close the opposition down? So they were getting at our defence a little bit too early because the press wasn't coming from the front, and then it just seemed a bit detached.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about this, you know, we have done for a couple of years and more. You can't just blame one unit of the team for, you know, for the lack, it wasn't lackluster, but you can't blame one unit of the team, whether it be defensive, offensive, or midfield. It's a team game. And I think, like you say, it was, they were, whether it was through choice or whatever, but they were finding it difficult to do the usual closing down. And it just led to us being under pressure when we really didn't need to be under pressure. Normally, you'd find the Liverpool side, once they got possession of the ball, you know, they'd make the opposition difficult for it to win it back. But there were occasions when there were underhit passes and they were passing to people who had men on them marked. And a bit like Sparta themselves, we were causing our own problems, to be honest. And some of it was through passing out from the back. And like you say, it wasn't that we were trying to close them down early enough. We were letting them run through the channels and run through the, you know, run through between midfield and defence. And I think with better finishing, it could have been, you know, a much closer scoreline.
Ben, it was, you know, there was a few scares, wasn't it? There was the one Pete mentioned there, which was a really good save by Kells, and Joe Gomez, you know, covered behind him and made a really good clearance off the line. Kells then pushed another one over the bar. There was a couple of blocks by Ibu, you know, from situations that they had, and then there was the one where again I think Kells made the save and it, and the fella couldn't sort his feet out and put it past the post, and I think at the time it was still 1-0. And then, you know, Cody, on the other hand, we also had, you know, a couple of chances ourselves. There was, you know, Cody had a couple, and Cody's going through a period himself now, similar to what Darwin went through in the early part of the season, where, you know, he hits things really well and they don't go in. I mean, Cody himself could have had a hat trick tonight, but the keeper made saves from him, even from a deflection, where, you know, earlier in the season he was mishitting them and they were going in. You know what I mean? And you could feel that he was desperate to get a goal tonight with Cody. You can never fault his efforts. So what did you make of that period of play?
It was, I think Pete is right when he used the analogy of a basketball game. It was end to end. We've had a few games like this recently, like the Southampton game at home the other day, the first half in particular. It reminded me of that a bit, where we did ride our luck a little bit. We can't do this on Sunday. Christ, we cannot do that on Sunday. But I thought it was a bit harsh. The half-time score, to be fair, on Prague. I think it could have been 5-3, like genuinely could have been 5-3 at half-time, and I don't think anyone would have argued with it. It was just one of those games, and Kelleher did well for a couple of them, but the defence was a bit all over the shop, and I think we'll probably touch on it in the second half. But when the captain came on, it shows you what a player he is because it all of a sudden wasn't. And I think you could tell it was a bit of a. There was a lot of experienced players in the back line, but there wasn't the rhythm
Leader.
with playing. And yeah, the leader, but not so much that. Just the you could tell they hadn't played much football together. There wasn't those partnerships there and stuff like that. But It was just like we've played of late, where we have rolled our luck a little bit defensively, but our strikers, I felt sorry for Gakpo. Again, it was in the second half, but there was one where he was one on one, and he turned the player really well, and he hit it without looking where the keeper was. he looked desperate for a goal tonight, Gakpo. But like you said, you can't fault his effort; it will come.
I mean, I thought that the one he had in the first half when he turned and hit it really, really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, the keeper made a really good save off him. It's similar, as I said, it just reminded me, you know, people will be starting to get on his back now, similar to the way some of them were, with Darwin.
Yeah, the crowd like a scapegoat, don't they? I think the one that you're referring to in the first half, I thought that at the post until the replay came in. Like
I did. The way it came off the keeper's arm.
I thought it hit the post. It was unlucky, really.
Saved, in fairness.
They're not a bad team. I mean, we scored five against them, as Pete's lad was saying to him. They are decent, like. So I think sometimes we forget how good we actually are. So we're never going to have football games where teams don't create chances against you. I think we're all a bit deluded now because we watch Man City and they just dominate teams. But even they, of late, concede chances as well. We're playing European football away in the last 16. They're no mugs. It was a professional performance, really.
Oh, Pete. Just that we then sort of after an hour 30-odd minutes, we then go 2-0 up. With a great goal from Darwin, but when you watch it, you do wonder what the keeper was doing, because he seemed to do a bad Jones, didn't he, and dive the sort of wrong way, where he should have been diving, let us say. But you still have to say, you know, you still have to give Darwin Nunes credit, you know, for the efforts. You know, the ball did swerve, and it won't do his confidence any harm at all. Leading into the game against, you know, the 115ers on Sunday.
Yeah, I think their goalie, in fairness, we made reference to the save that he made from Cody, but I think he was culpable for a couple of goals, and you could probably, you know, he seemed to dive past the ball, didn't he? Whether he thought it was going to swerve into the top corner and it went more central, but you've got to give Nunes credit for having the bravery, I suppose, if you want, of hitting the ball from that far out. And he's hit a couple like that. I mean, he scored one in the Cup at Bournemouth, similar, where he put inside and checked in and smashed it. That was made up for him. And he, you know what you get with Darwin? He just brings chaos to defence, you know, defenders. And if he doesn't do it, he makes space for other people. So, yeah, it was well hit. As I say, you could probably point a finger at the keeper, he should have done better. But like you say, it will only just boost his confidence even more. And, you know, he probably, at the end of the day, he may have been a bit disappointed to come off when he was on a hat-trick, because I think as the game went on, we always thought there was going to be more goals for us. But, it was good. As I say, yeah, it's the old thingy, isn't it? If you don't buy a ticket, you don't win the raffle. And he took his chance, and as I say, the goalie looked a little bit iffy on a few occasions tonight. So I was praying for them to hit it every time they were near the box, to be honest, because I thought he was probably their weakest link, you know, the keeper.
Ben, you know, you have to have a right smile sometimes, don't you? With football sometimes, isn't it? You know, earlier in the season, Darwin would have hit that shot and it would have hit the defender on his back and gone wide, or you know what I mean? But now, hopefully, you know, he's in this rich vein of form, you know, because he scored, didn't he, against Brentford with the game before he got his injury. Then he's come back and he scored the winning goal, you know, at the weekend. And now, you know, tonight, he scored two tonight. Now, let me know what you think of the first goal, but I wanted to come to you specifically on the second one, because I thought that pass from McAllister was exceptional. to put Nunes in for the second goal. And what a finish it was. If you could have blamed the goalkeeper slightly for the first one, he had absolutely no chance for the second one. And I don't think any goalkeeper would have saved it.
So the first one then, we'll start with that. I text the lads about that before I seen the replay with just what a goal. And then the replay came on and you thought, actually, what is the keeper doing? But then the more you see the replay, the keeper doesn't cover himself in glory. It does move when he hits it. It was just terrible positioning from the goalkeeper. But it reminded me a little bit of the goal that he scored against Bournemouth in the Cup. Similar kind of position, similar kind of finish. Although the one against Bournemouth was better because it was more in the corner. But he just looked confident taking it. And it was a hell of a strike. Okay, take the goalkeeper away. It was still a bloody good goal there. And the second one, it was another brilliant ball from McAllister. But I was listening to Steve McManaman on the commentary, and he said it bounced three times before he hit it. So he didn't snatch at it. He let it get into the right position before he pulled the trigger. And what you were alluding to about earlier in the season, when his luck was, let's say, less than what it is now, I do think he would have not snatched at it, but I do think he would have took that earlier.
I think Ben could have just cut in there a little bit. I think the difference is that he was hitting them equally as well, but they were like hitting the keeper, or they were, the number of times he hit the woodwork.
No, you know, I get that. I get that, Les. But at the same time, he was still being a little bit rash, whereas he's not particularly doing that now.
Yeah.
So his game has come on. I don't think you can argue with that. He has matured in the way he makes his decisions, I'd say. And we're seeing the positiveness of that. I just thought the second goal was a far better goal than the first one.
Yeah, totally agree.
I just think everything about it was better. The finish, that it was right into the corner, wasn't it? A bit like the Newcastle goals away. He definitely, I think that's his best attribute, you know, that kind of goal against the goalkeeper to the bottom left. I think he does that brilliantly. And I think that's a real asset of his. Hopefully we see that again on Sunday. But I thought in the first half, I know we'll talk about Man of the Match later, but in the first half, I thought he was the best player on the pitch.
I think you can tell, lads, although they've not outwardly said it, I think he's obviously been working on his finishing at Kirby. And I think it was evidence in the Brentford game, because I'm not being funny, there's been times this season where he's been one-on-one and you haven't backed him to score. And then that Brentford goal, where he just took his time, looked up, and then he chipped the keeper. And I think he's certainly been working on his finishing. And like Ben said, not necessarily snatching at things, but just use time in the right moment when to release the shot. And it's been a culmination of a couple of things that he's had. You know, he's, like Les said, he's hit the bar more times than Dean Martin, hasn't he? And, you know, he's...
You'll have
he's,
to explain
he's...
to the younger listeners
I've said that before.
Well, I know, you have said that before, yeah, Pete. Yeah, I think you got such a good reaction last time you said it.
I thought I'd get a laugh out of Les, but you can go on Google and find out. But yeah, I certainly think he's been working on his finishing. Maybe Rushy's pulled him to one side and said, you know, it's not all about, you know, it's not all about the quickness. It's the right time when to do it. You know, Rushy was the master at that, wasn't he? He'd wait and wait if need be. And on other occasions, he'd do a snapshot when the defence and the keeper weren't ready. So I think it's something he's been working on, Darwin, and we're starting to reap the benefits of it.
Do you not think, Pete, it just could be, you know, and I know Tom isn't on the pod tonight, but I know we'll be listening in once it goes up. Right, and he doesn't like the mention of the C word. But do you think it just could be simply confidence that all of a sudden he scores that goal against Brentford, you know, when he was clear one-on-one with the lovely chip. He follows that up with the, you know, with the headed winner, you know, against Forest at the weekend. So now he's confident, so he's not really thinking about the finish. Whereas earlier in the season, he was perhaps thinking too much about, right, I've got to make extra sure here, or I've got to hit this so hard. And when you're confident, you just do things more naturally.
I think it definitely is. I mean, we've spoken before. You know, even the greats, you know, the Kennys and the Rushes of this world, you know, they've all gone through what they call lean patches, and then it just takes one goal, and it may not necessarily be a fantastic goal. It might be a 2-yard tap, and it might fly up off the back of, you know, the back of you and go in. But then it does breed confidence in players, and especially goal scorers. Goal scorers, once they get in the groove that they're getting, that they score a goal, it seems to come like buses, doesn't it? You know, it's like every game. He'll be going out there on Sunday, Darwin Nunes, believing that he's going to score a goal against City, at least one goal. He'll have belief now that on Sunday he'll get chances and put them away.
He'll definitely score on Sunday. I'll put money on that now, and I'm not a gambler. But you know, like the thing about confidence that Les said, it's almost a bit like his fellow countrymen, like Suarez. When he signed for us, his first 12, 18 months, if you go back to, I don't know if podcasts were a thing back then, but if you go back to any kind of radio phone-in, you'd all get like, oh, if only he could finish. It'd be world-class if he could finish. And that went on for a long time, that. I think we've got, like,
you're right, but people... The thing is, people forget, and people forget.
Yeah, that's what I mean, Les. Exactly. Yeah. So it's the same. Like, I'm not saying that Darwin is as good as Suarez. Don't get me wrong here, but there are similarities. Like, so
if you remember as well, when Fernando Torres first signed for Liverpool, he couldn't score away from home. He'd only scored at home.
Anfield,
and it took him ages to score away from home. Ian Rush, when he first came into the side, you know, he went like half a season without scoring. Yeah. You know, Kenny Dalglish once went 12 months without scoring for Liverpool. So, you know, but people have selective memories. They only remember the player that the player turned out to be, not what the player was like before he became the superstar that we all love. And every player goes on it. Goes on a journey, you know, to get to that level.
Right. Some players
sort of just do it now and again once they get there and think once they've reached that, then they've made it. Other players just, you know, think, right, that's my level now and I'm going to go out. I still maintain that if you ask me who Liverpool's greatest ever player is, I will never say Luis Suarez. If you ask me who the best player I've ever seen play for Liverpool is, I will always say Luis Suarez in that season. But he didn't do it over a sustained period to be classed as Liverpool's greatest ever player.
Do you think he was better than Kenny?
In that season, right, in that season, 13-14, that is the best individual performance consistently that I've ever seen by a Liverpool player.
What about Salah his first year? Wasn't far off it, you know. No. It wasn't far off it. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm not arguing with you here, because I think Suarez was the best, but I don't think there's much in it. You know, when you look back on it,
you know
now,
what the difference is? I'll tell you what the difference is. Look at the team that Suarez was in, and look at the team that Salah was in.
The team that Salah came into wasn't brilliant, though.
No, but it was still...
The team that he played in a couple of years later was. But you're right. But again, this is the thing that when you look back at the team that Suarez was in, it wasn't that bad. We had Gerrard, Henderson in midfield, and Coutinho. And then we had Sturridge and Sterling up front with him. It was only the defence which was shite and the goalkeeper. The actual attacking point was brilliant.
And the biggest factor of all, we had the manager who was totally
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So you know, if you'd have had Luis Suarez playing at his prime under Jurgen Klopp, you know, he could have gone even higher. And what he did at Barcelona as well just proved.
Well, put it this way. If we had Suarez the last 5 years, we probably would have won at least two or three more leagues, at least. But anyway, we've dissected, we've gone off on one here, haven't we?
But yeah, so just to say that, you know, we went in 3-0 up at half time. And to be fair, Ben, you'd have to say that, you know, even with our rose tinted glasses on, we were fortunate to be going in 3 goals ahead after the way that first half, you know, went.
Like I said earlier, Les, very, very fortunate. I think we were lucky to go in without conceding the goal. And I think from a Prague point of view, they would have gone into the dressing room thinking, how are we 3-0 back down here? But we were up and we took our chances well. And in a weird way, I don't think 3-0 flattered us. I know it sounds contradicting. We could have scored more. We could have conceded a few, but we could have scored more. And like I said before, it could have been 6-3 or 5-3 at half time, and nobody would have said, well, that's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous thing to say. It could have been. There was that many good chances for both teams. So yeah, you're right. 3-0 was harsh on them.
The one thing we didn't mention there in the first half, Pete, was when Kelleher went down after that challenge and looked to be in a fair bit of pain. And you know, after the malicious rumours of the other day, you know, you just thought, oh no, that's all we need. But luckily, it was just like he just seemed to get winded, didn't he, by the way he landed?
When you saw the replay and they slowed it down, the way he landed, I think he just had all the wind blowing out of him, and I think he was just struggling to get, you know, to get some air into his lungs. But yeah, you do worry that, you know, the injuries. Thankfully, we are starting to get some players back, but the last thing you need is more injuries on top of the ones we've had, and especially in goal, because I'm not too sure how far Ali is off being fit either. So that's no disrespect to add any of the goalies that are going to come in, the likes of Adrian, whatever. But, you know, Kelleher, he's just shown how good a goalkeeper he is by having this run in the team. You know, you used to see Kells just occasionally in the odd cup game, and if Ali was injured, but he's had this run in the team and he's making some fantastic saves, and he did again tonight. But yeah, it was a little bit of a worry when he went down, and then, you know, you thought, oh, for God's sake, hope it's not like a, you know, a serious injury. But I think he just had the wind taken out of his sails, to be honest.
Yeah, so Pete, so we come out then at the start of the second half, and, you know, Joe Gomez is replaced by Conor Bradley. And within, I'd say, a minute at the start of the second half, Robbo does exactly the same as what he did against Brentford when they scored, where he went charging forward out of position. They got him behind him. It was borderline offside. And then, you know, they crossed over and poor Connor put it in his own net. Perhaps he should have gone with his left foot. But to be fair, he'd only just come on the field. So I think that was his first touch of the ball. So he wasn't even, you know, into the flow of the game or anything. But I thought that absolutely summed Robbo's performance up tonight. I thought he was, you know, when he looks back at his performance, you know, he won't look back at it as one of the best he's ever given the Liverpool shirt. And considering he was the captain in the first half, they were getting him behind him then as well. So he was nowhere near his best tonight. But as we know, you know, players need to get minutes. And we've seen that before with the likes of Kostas. After they've been out and haven't played, you need to get your rhythm back. And hopefully, although Robbo wasn't at his best tonight, that will do him good going forward, and especially for the game, you know, at the weekend if he's selected to start.
Yeah, it wasn't just his positional thing. I think there was a few times tonight that I felt a bit sorry for Harvey Elliott at times, because he was given hospital balls out, as I was saying. I said, but we came out second half, and this was what I was talking about. It's funny when I discuss things with our Jack with the age difference. He's 30, you know, he's getting on 30, and I'm 65 this year. And I'm saying to him, We'd have just killed this game off. It'd have been boring the second half in Europe. We'd have gone away to, to Benfica or whatever. I know we scored four there one year, but we'd have gone away and just killed this game off. And we were still so open at the back. And I was saying, there's no need for us to play such a high line. Why are we playing such a high line when we know how quick they are on the break? And I think, like you say, there was a couple of things that caused the goal. I think Conor Bradley did a Jamie Carragher and went at it with his wrong foot, similar to the goal in the West Ham Cup final where Carragher actually missed the ball and hit his left foot and went in.
It
But I
was
know
like
Conor
massive
went.
against Tottenham this season, Peter.
Say again, sorry.
It was like massive against Tottenham this season.
Yeah, right. Where you think, just go with your other foot. It's more natural to go with your left foot and just clear it out for a throw-in. But, looked at the replay and I thought the lad was offside, in fairness. But whether it's the way they do VAR on the continent, but within seconds, they sanctioned the goal and on we went. So you were what's the name? You were. It gave them. They were always going to come out and have a go because, like Ben was saying, it could have been 5-3 or something in the first half, and they must have been scratching their heads. So their boss must have come out and said, let's just have a go. Let's give our fans something even more to sing about because they never stopped singing all match. And for 10 minutes or so after the kickoff in the second half, they looked dangerous in that. And then it was ironic, actually, that when Ibu went off, hopefully precautionally rather than injured, and Van Dijk came on, it sort of steadied the ship again. But it was. I hated to say it at the time. You know,
Did
it reminded me of. It reminded me not so much the manner of the goal, but it reminded me of when we went up against Seville in the final, and we came out in the second half, and we were just blown away. When Moreno went in with a stupid tackle
Yeah.
and then equalised, and I said to our Jack, "We shouldn't be doing this. We've no need to be going at it hammer and tong. We can just, get possession." And I think once Virgil came on, I'm not saying it was just solely down to him because Szoboszlai came on at the same time, but it seemed to steady the ship, and we started getting better possession then. And like you say, I think after about an hour or 65 minutes or so, I think once Diaz scored the fourth, really they'd blown out. They had nothing left after that.
Yeah, so it's good news, isn't it, Ben? What Jürgen sort of said, or it seems more positive news, let us say, that Jürgen's come out after the game and said that Ibu's come off as more as a precaution. Joe Gomez is okay, and Nunes is okay, which is the ones when you were listening to the commentary on the telly, they were trying to scaremonger and say, oh, Joe Gomez must have gone off with an injury at half time, etc., etc. But he's fine. Darwin Núñez is fine. I think he took Darwin off when he did because he was forced to make a substitution with Ibu. I think in an ideal world, that might have happened after 60 minutes, but his hand was forced a little bit. But it is more positive news, isn't it, that the injury to Ibu, and he walked off and he. When he walked off, he didn't look as though he was limping at all. He looked reasonably content. So fingers crossed that it does seem to be nothing and that he's fit and ready to go again on Sunday against the 115ers.
I hope so, Les. I'm still at the back of my mind thinking he's gone off with an injury. I'd be surprised if he starts against them on Sunday. I hope I'm wrong. But saying that, if Quanta or Gomez had to start centre half, I wouldn't be scared, put it that way. But let's hope Ibu is fit. I'm surprised he didn't make the substitution at half time, if truth be told. I was expecting a few more. I thought it would be the way Jürgen's done it of late, is that Van Dijk and Ibu have had a couple of games where they've had 45 minutes each, haven't they? Happened against Southampton in the cup, and I think it's happened in the Europa League as well.
You think possibly Bennett was because he actually thought maybe that Ibu and Virgil had 45 minutes each last week in the cup against Southampton. And Conor Bradley and Joe Gomez have played more minutes than the two of them. And he wanted to give them really a 45-minute break each. Right,
possibly. I just think, I mean, hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it? And we wouldn't even be talking about it if it wasn't for this injury. But I can't argue with what I've said, Les. I was shocked that it didn't happen. I did at half time expect that. But it's done now anyway, isn't it? So,
well, it's funny you should say that, Ben, because the only time I realised Conor Bradley had come on at half time was when
they
said
they didn't announce it, did they?
No.
The telly didn't announce it. So I was thinking, have I just not seen him in the first half? Because I was like, where's he come on? Like you, I'm glad you said that, Les, because I was thinking, have I just imagined it as well?
No, because I'd looked at it, because like you, I totally agree with you, by the way. I actually thought it would be 45 minutes each for Virgil and Ibu.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm settling down, ready to watch the second half, ready then for them to tell us if there's been any changes. He didn't mention anything at all. And next thing, they score, and I didn't even realise it was an own goal at first. And then they said, oh, it's an own goal by Conor Bradley.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, when did he come on?
Do you think the commentators were there? Because even when the goal went in, the own goal, they didn't react straight away, you know?
They didn't react either straight away for the penalty.
No, which makes me think, I don't think they were actually there. I think they were watching it on the telly as well.
I think they were in a studio in somewhere, because they never actually said.
Yeah.
Normally they say, oh, we're over there or whatever. I don't think they were over there either, because they weren't.
Yeah.
They were reacting to telly pictures rather than what they were actually saying at the game.
We're going off on something again here, but that really pisses me off, that, you know, because you pay a lot of money for BT or TNT. You know, they make an absolute fortune.
I think because, you know what it is, Ben? I think it's because it's possibly the Europa League and they pay for them to go to the Champions
League. I know, but Les, I mean, with the biggest club in the country, there'll be more people watching that than that watched City last night.
Yeah, no, I totally get it. So, Pete, not long after, you know, we then, you know, get our three goal cushion back, went good work from down the right between Conor Bradley and Harvey Elliott, you know, goes to Luis Diaz. And this is what I was saying about poor old Cody before. You know, Louis has a shot, it takes a deflection. And then it goes, you know, don't get me wrong, I was grateful for it to go in. But poor Cody, you know, he'd give anything for a deflection like that to tuck it into the back of the net. But I think Louis worked hard tonight. And I thought he was a goal that will do his confidence no harm as well to take into the weekend.
He did. He worked hard again tonight. And as I say, we were me and my lad were having a go at him for getting in the way of Nunes in the first couple of minutes, because I did think he got in his way a bit. But
yeah, I agree with you.
He did work hard, and there were occasions when I think a couple of times he was running at their defence, and I think one of their lads got booked for a blatant pullback on him, and he was causing trouble to their defence. But like you say, when the goal came, it was a bit scruffy, really, wasn't it? It looked like, I think Conor and Harvey played little 1-2 or played nice little football. But then when it actually come into the middle, I think there were a couple of occasions you would have expected the Sparta defenders to clear it. And then, like you say, when Diaz actually hit the shot, it wasn't a venomous shot. It just sort of looped in over the keeper when it took the deflection. But I think he deserved it on the night, because he did work hard for the 90 minutes. I think he came off for Salah towards the end, but he did work hard all night, so I think he deserved something out of it, certainly.
Yeah, Ben, it was good to see, you know, Maka then get a rest and Bobby Clark come on, who I thought did particularly well when he come on, both in his closing down and his, you know, his overall distribution, really. And then not long after that, you know, we've seen the return of Mo Salah when he come on for Luis Diaz. You know, supposedly had a couple of opportunities. Gakpo had a couple of more where we could have increased our lead. And by this time, you know, Liverpool were really, you know, controlling the game, weren't they? They'd seem to run themselves out. Their threat was becoming less and less and less. It was just a case of, you know, could Liverpool get any more goals? And then, you know, Mo seemed to score a good goal. And you know, for the life of me, I couldn't see how it was offside. I was amazed when it was getting checked, and even more amazed when they said it was offside, because it certainly didn't look offside.
No.
So it just shows you, doesn't it, that the automated offside that they use in Europe.
They didn't show it though, did they? They didn't show the still. They showed you the image, but they didn't superimpose the technology.
I've just seen a still, or Jack's just sends us a still.
Doesn't look.
And he says, "How on this planet is that offside?" Because the defenders, whether we do VAR different in this country to the continent, they seem to come to a decision much quicker than we do.
Yeah, that's you automated offside though, don't you, Pete?
Yeah. Rod, well, if that's Rod, the case, I've seen the automated offside when Newcastle played PSG, and in fairness, if that's the way forward, but it certainly doesn't look like it on this still. It looks like the defender's certainly behind him, but it's a shame really, because I think they mentioned it. Was it something like 20? I can't remember the record it would have been, but it was some record.
Seventh.
Yeah,
consecutive season scoring 20 goals, which no Liverpool player has ever done.
Not bad, really, for a one-season wonder, is it?
And also tonight, Leonard, just to divert again a little bit, Pete, Nunes scored the 1,000th goal under Jurgen Klopp tonight, which is some record. And the number 9, it was Bobby Firmino, he scored the 500th. So it's a...
Who scored the first?
Nathaniel Klein, I think.
Was it? Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I'm sure it was Nathaniel Klein.
That's a pub quiz for you, that, isn't it? That one.
Yeah. So then, you know, Mo scored. It was disallowed, and then right at the with the last kick of the game. So we scored basically with the last kick of the first half and the last kick of the second half. So Bosley, made it 5, and I thought he looked much better when he come on today. He looked a bit fitter. He looked more confident, and that all bodes well for Sunday, Ben.
It does. He did look good when he came on. It was just good to see him doing what he did at the start of the season, where he was charging at defenders, because we have missed that. I know Pete absolutely loves him, but he is a good player, isn't he? Like, we do miss him when he's not there. But that, going back to that Salah goal, when I saw the replay of that, I was thinking, it's not offside. Like, that is like the definition of a toenail. And I know, like, by the letter of the law, it's offside, but I think, like, the conversation needs to be had. That isn't what offside is actually about. Like, I know, like, there's the rule about the Arsenal Wenger tried to suggest, but
what if that before offside. Ben, what if that before, Ben, is there's a... Do you remember after the season where Jordan Henderson's goal was chalked off at Goodison?
The derby,
you know, when Manny was beamed offside, and there's a few like that. And then for the season after, they brought in a bit of a margin of error in the Premier League.
Yeah, yeah.
Apparently in Europe, they don't do that.
No.
So, and it's automated offside. And as I said before, if that's what automated offside is, you know, it's not the golden ticket that we all thought it'd be.
Well, to be honest, if that's automated offside, you want to see it. Like, you want to see it looks a bit like a ghost, doesn't it, when they do it, where they have that.
I made mention of the Newcastle PSG game early in the season, and it did show you the replay, and it looked like it was almost like a ghost in. But when you looked at it on that, you could see right away it was definitive. You still look at some of the decisions made in our league, and you're thinking, how have they got that line like that? Because it's not right. And I think somewhere down the line, pardon the pun, I think the rules got to change, where we give the striker the benefit of the doubt, and maybe go to a ruling where there's got to be either daylight between them and the defender, or certainly not these, where they draw things from armpits.
I mean
you can't, you know, if you, it's ridiculous.
Fair, like, if that, it's sort of arbitrary, isn't it? We can sit here all day And it will go in our favours some games and it won't in others. So it is what it is. And if they, I think today, I just would have liked to have seen the superimposed line across showing it.
Yeah.
Because I, from the naked eye, it didn't look offside. So I know you can be deceived by angles and stuff. But when you look at it, you think he's on. He obviously wasn't. But it's just another element of VAR that really, really sucks out all of the love of the game. But anyway, it is what it is. Salah looked good when he came on. There was a through ball, wasn't there?
And yeah,
was it, yeah, he was, killed it, yeah.
And he, yeah. His touch was almost perfect. It was just slightly behind him when it rolled. And I thought if he would have got that under, he was in and it would have been a goal. But then when he did it and it went behind him, I thought, please don't pull up. Please don't pull up on it. But he looked like he did against Brentford when he came on. He looked sharp, didn't he? He's not often injured, so I don't think he's the kind of player that's going to take, you know, 5 or 10 games to come back into form. He scored a goal today. Okay, it was chalked off, but he looked dangerous, didn't he? And Szoboszlai, his goal, again, the keeper was questionable, wasn't he? And I don't know about you two, but I was shocked. Pass it. Because I think Salah was in, wasn't he? And I think if he wouldn't have scored, Salah would have ripped his head off.
I think Mo did well, actually, because I think the defender was in two minds, and
yeah, he
made a good run to take the defender away, Mo.
Yeah.
But I was like you, I was wanting him to just give it to Mo to slot in, but in fairness, he took the right option because he scored, you know.
But it's good, isn't it, just to have a set of midfielders now that are a goal threat. Like,
yeah.
It's been a while since we've had that, like, so.
Yeah.
And even if you look at, like, the evolution of the front three, they're all goal scorers, but I think gone are the days where, well, it is, gone are the days when we are just reliant or over-reliant on those three. We've got goals everywhere now.
Yeah. Pete, you know, just to sum up, a 5-1 away win, you know, in the first leg of a knockout game in the Champions League, you know, you take that. Maybe, you know, in a few years' time, you look in the history books and say, blooming hell, what a performance that must have been, you know, for Liverpool to win, you know, 5-1 over there. You wouldn't put it down as a great performance. But, you know, it was a great result, wasn't it, to take into the second leg at Anfield?
Yeah. I mean, pre-kickoff, I said I'd be happy with a draw or a one-goal, you know, victory, 1-0, 2-1, whatever. But as I say, I knew these were a decent side, but to go away and score 5 and only concede the one, you know, like Ben said a few times, it could have been so different. But yeah, that's a fantastic result to take into next week. You're loath to say job's done, but it'd be a calamitous bloody game if we even had any scares on the night, to be honest. I think we, you know, we can probably go on and score a couple more and make it a big sort of aggregate score. But yeah, it's a fantastic. I mean, we've been away in Europe before when we put like Porto to the sword, and I mentioned Benfica going back a long way, and they were games that we were totally in control of, and never looked like we were in any trouble. But tonight, even though the scoreline suggests otherwise, you know, there were times tonight when it could have gone either way at times, you know. But yeah, it's a fantastic result to take into next week. And it's a fantastic result to take into the game at the weekend as well.
Yeah. Ben, I'll go to you first with your player of the match before you give me your nomination. Right. Tom has told me that his man of the match was Harvey Elliott. So I just wanted to put that out there. So who's getting your vote?
It's quite a tough one because I don't like giving man of the match to a player that isn't on the pitch for them for over an hour. But I think you're going to be hard-pressed to look past Nunes. 2 goals, 2 very good goals. So I think it has to be him, and just on him. I've just had a text message now. Darwin Nunes in less than 2 seasons at Liverpool has already surpassed Duncan Ferguson's record at Everton.
Has he really?
Literally, that message came in.
You forgot to say Duncan the legend, Ferguson. How he's a legend, I will never know. I will never know.
I met him about 6 months ago, maybe longer, actually. In a garden centre. That's how excited my life is these days. And he was really nice, you know, like a proper nice guy. Like, I was speaking to him, and I messaged one of my mates and said, "You won't believe who's on the table next to me, Duncan Ferguson." And he was like, "Oh, I'll get his autograph for me, lad." And I did. And he was like, "Oh, are you a Blue?" And I was like, "No." And he was like, "Oh, I'm not giving it to you then," like joking around. And like, he was really, really nice guy. I wouldn't want to argue with him, like, but he was sound.
Anyway, we're diverting again. You know, we're
We went 5-1 and we're talking about bloody Duncan Ferguson here. What's going on?
Don't go on, Pete. Who's your nomination?
There's a few. I agree with Tom. I thought Harvey Elias had a good game. Endo had his steady game in the midfield. Kelleher for his saves, but I think I've got to go with Ben on this. And I know he was only on the pitch 50 minutes, but the two goals, as I say, we pointed the finger a little bit at the keeper, but the two goals that Nunes scored, and just his all-round chaotic, well, the chaos that he causes for defence. I think with him on the pitch, we're always in with a chance. So although he was on the pitch for 50 minutes, I mean, Van Dijk did well when he came on. Even some of the substitutions were good, but I think I'd give the nod to Nunes for his two goals and his work rate.
Yeah, it's a full house to me. I thought it was Darwin. When you score two goals like that, you're only on the field for 50 minutes, and then you're taken off as your precaution. You've basically done your job. You've given the team the advantage that, you know, they needed. So, you know, you can't really look beyond them. Like Pete said, I'd like to give, you know, Kells a mention because, you know, I thought when it was needed, I thought he did really well when called upon and made some really important saves, you know, especially in the first half. But for me, you can't look beyond Darwin Nunes tonight. So he sort of, you know, gets the Player of the Match award. So now we look forward to the game against the 115ers at Anfield on Sunday. Now, Pete, what I'm going to ask you to do, you've got, obviously, you'll have had your pen and paper out in you know, naming your team for Sunday, right? But what I want you to do is, if, let's say, if he doesn't make it, just give us an alternative who you play at centre-back, you know, in that case, in that scenario. And also, do you think that Mo's done enough in the 15 minutes he was on tonight to get a start? Or do you think he's a weapon that we will use from the bench on Sunday?
I've got my team, like you say, I always have a go. I've got my team written down. And if Ibu's not fit, I've put Joe Gomez to slot in next to Virgil. Do you want the rest of the team? Or?
Go on, yeah.
It's probably as strong as I think we can go. Kelleher, I'd put Bradley at right back, Robbo left back, Endo, Macken and Szoboszlai in the midfield. And I would start Mo up front with Diaz and Nunes. I think you've got Nunes, who's going to be ultra confident, like you say, it's that C word again. Salah, although he was only on the pitch for 15 minutes tonight, he showed he was quite sharp, actually, like Ben said, that pass that he took down and almost was through on goal. And Diaz played well tonight, so you've got three strikers there who are confident. Szoboszlai did well when he came on, so I think he'd get a start. As I say, it's just whether Canati's fit, and if not, I think Joe Gomez would probably get the nod.
Ben, do you agree with what Pete said there, or have you got any sort of alternatives in your mind?
Quickly, just like wrote down a team. Obviously, we know the goalkeeper, don't we? Bradley at right back, Virgil, and Ibu. If Ibu doesn't play, I go Kwanzaa rather than Gomez at centre half, with Robbo at left back. Although, walk into Anfield on Sunday when that team's announced, if the Greek's in it, that wouldn't shock me either, you know. Genuinely wouldn't surprise me. But I do think Robbo will play. And then the midfield of McAllister, Endo, and I do think Szoboszlai will make it, because I think if Gravenberch was fit, I think he'd play him. And I do feel sorry for Elliot. I just think the fact that he's played the 90 minutes today means, I think we sort of forget how young Elliot is. And he's the same age as all of these other kids.
Yeah,
but he's played
but we don't call
more.
Him a kid, do we?
No, we don't. And like, I think he's still a better player for us off the bench. So I think on Sunday, I think we'll see him for 20 minutes, half an hour at the end.
Ben, if Ibu's fit and he slots in next to Virgil, do you think there's a case for playing Joe Gomez at left back just to try and counter what's her name?
No, I don't think there is, because I think, like, if you listen to what Jürgen says about playing Man City, I think Gomez has been really good for us since Robbo's been injured. I think the best way to beat City is to go at them and play to our strength.
Oh, yeah. So I agree with that as well.
I think we've got to try and push City back as far as we can. And I think by having Robbo on the pitch, we've got more of a chance of doing that, which is why I'm really hopeful that Ibu can play, because he can just push that defence 5 or 10 yards further forward, because we've got four really quick defenders, which I think we're going to need. But Kwanzaa's not a slouch by any stretch of the imagination. But going back to the team, I hope that Mo starts. I think he's... I mean, he doesn't have to prove anything to anyone. I think he's done enough tonight to warrant that start. So I think he'll start with Diaz on the left. And I think, unfortunately for Cody, he's the man that drops out, and Darwin is the number nine.
Pete, if you asked Ben the question about Joe Gomez, I would actually start Joe Gomez at left back on Sunday.
Yeah.
I mean, I just think that Robbo's form tonight worried me a little bit. Now, you know, as we know, from Kostas early in the season, you can have a poor game one day and play, the game of your life the next game. Thought Robbo was poor tonight. There's no taking that away from him. Still think he's a class act, but he hasn't quite got his rhythm back yet. I think this is a massive game on Sunday. A game that, if Liverpool win, it'll give us, a major boost in our quest, to win the league this season. And I just think that, playing Joe Gomez at left back on Sunday, I don't think it's a negative move, as Ben said. You know what I mean? I just think that...
No, I don't think it's negative,
no.
Les.
I
just
know
think,
what you're saying.
Yeah. I just want us to be on the front foot.
I just think it gives you more defensive surety, really, doesn't it?
Yeah,
I don't know, honestly. I think we're forgetting how good of a defender Robbo is.
Yeah, but tonight, I was just saying, going on what I've seen tonight, and he did the same thing against Brentford as well, where he, he charged forward again and he got in behind him. And, two goals were conceded, in those games when... if he'd have held his position tonight, they wouldn't have scored at all. Bradley wouldn't have scored the own goal. So I just don't know whether... Don't get me wrong, Ben. If Robbo was playing at his best, there'd be no debate. And I do think, if you're asking me who I think will start on Sunday, I think it'll be Robbo. But that's not what I would do. If
do you think it will be, though, because of the amount that Robbo played tonight?
Yeah, because... I just think that he's...
I know he's like a Duracell bunny, isn't he?
Yeah. Don't forget, he got taken off at the weekend, didn't he? And Kostas come on, so he didn't play the full game at the weekend. And then he didn't play
the cup final
week.
Full game.
He didn't play last week against Southampton either, because he was ill. So I don't know. Just what I would do based on Joe Gomez's form this season, And also the form Robbo's shown when he comes back. And I'm sure that over the next few weeks, Robbo will be back to his best.
Mm.
But this is a game on Sunday where you've got to go, for me, with the players who are showing the best form. And to me, when Joe Gomez was playing left back, I thought he was fantastic. I mean, we talked on the pod many of the games that he played there and how good he was. And he was getting mentioned as man of the match. And I remember us having a discussion, Ben, about, when Robbo was fit and we knew we'd got to the League Cup final, who would start at Wembley. And I sort of said, didn't I? I don't care. You said Robbo's the best in the world. And I said, I don't disagree with you. But if you're going on who deserves to start in that game, it would be Joe Gomez. Now, as it proves, right, you got it spot on because you said Jürgen would go with Robbo. And I think that's what he will do again on Sunday. Mm. But just for me, going on, how they've both played at the left back, I would sort of start with Joe Gomez. But I do think Robbo will start. And again, I do think Mo will start at the weekend. Because of the status of the game, all be determined to start.
I think we need to factor in Trent as well, the fact that he's out. If we were to play Gomez and Bradley, that's our two right back options at the moment, isn't it? And I don't think Jürgen would want to risk that.
That's another good point.
I mean, there's no guarantee Bradley starts, It could be Gomez at right back. Exactly. We're all assuming that Bradley will start.
That's a good point.
So I think Bradley will start, but you just don't know, do you? We have got a few options there at the back now, which we never used to have. So it's going to be an interesting one. Thank God those rumours about Kelleher were wrong.
I'm just totally nuts at Twitter.
Yeah.
And some sites on Twitter that I don't think are run by real Liverpool fans who just sort of go for clickbait.
Yeah.
And they knew of all the players they could say had picked up a knock that would get them loads of clicks. It'd be one saying that it was Kelleher. You know what I mean? And, they just want to give it a rest. I'd already blocked the sites that they were on because I know that one of the lads at work was telling me, oh, have you seen this? Keller's has picked up knock. And I said, what sites are on? And he told me the ones. And I said, I blocked them ages ago.
Just to jump ahead a little bit here. Right. I think we're pretty much through, aren't we, in the Europa League. Next Thursday, do you think Adrian starts?
That's a possibility, depending. Mm-hmm. Obviously,
I would, honestly, I. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a possibility, although when you get to next Thursday, then there's a possibility that, Jürgen might look at it with Keller being in good form and good rhythm. He doesn't want to break that rhythm, and there's only then, two games for him to play in before the international break.
I wouldn't be surprised if Alisson's out for a little bit longer than that, but hopefully I'm wrong.
Yeah, well, we'll have to. I'm not saying he'll be back for the Brighton game, but what I mean is, once the international break comes, there's obviously he'll go away with the Republic of Ireland, but, there is a
he doesn't really play for them, though, does he? I mean, you'd think he probably will do now. With a different manager and stuff, but certainly going to be interesting for him.
Yeah, so it's going to be a real sort of humdinger of a game on Sunday. You look forward to these games, Pete, and you always think they're going to be absolute classics. They sometimes don't turn out to be like that. They can be tense affairs. I don't think the 115 is they're still a great side, but I don't think they're as good as the side that had the likes of David Silva in and, people like Company.
Gundogan
and Yaya Toure and, Aguero and people like that. But they're still a really good side. But I do think that, when I've seen them this season, teams can get at the back, at them at the defence. I don't think the defence is the strongest it's ever been. They're still very reliable on Walker. You know what I mean? So, you know, what Liverpool have got to do come Sunday is sort of make sure when we get the chances, we are ruthless and we take them. But it is a game that you're really looking forward to in anticipation. And we just hope that, you know, we come out with the 3 points and that will give us one hell of a boost to take into the, you know, the last league game before the international break. And then, you know, and then we know then if we win on Sunday, you know, we'll be going into the last international break of the season, top of the league.
Yeah, it's one of them that, like you say, in years, you know, years gone, I mean, we cancel one another out, and a couple of them, especially up the Etihad, they've been a bit drab affair, haven't they? But I think with Salah back fully fit, Nunes being as confident as he is, and with Diaz playing well, I think they are there to get us. I think we've just got to make sure that we're diligent at the back. That's why I was mentioning we've got to stop Foden cutting this infield, and if he does cut infield, you want the likes of Maka and Endo to block anything off. But I think I agree with Ben. I think if we can go at City, I think there's goals there for us. It's just a case that we have to be vigilant at the back. Obviously, Foden's a danger man, as is the big galoot at centre forward. He seems to score every time he touches the bloody thing, you know.
He's only ever scored once against us, though, for them.
No, he hasn't. But
and to be fair, he doesn't play that well against us. But
no, yeah. I mean, I went up to City a couple of years ago when he was not playing, and a few Liverpool fans were made up. And in fairness, they played better without him. They beat us 4-1, and he played us off the park without him, to be honest. But yeah, I think they're there to get us. And as I say, as long as we defend properly, I think we can get a result on Sunday.
Yeah, Ben, they're likely to be without Doku, who's got a muscle injury. And they've also lost Matias Nunes as well, who broke his finger last night. So, I mean, I know he's likely only to be a squad option. But, you know, Doku will be a loss for them with his pace.
I think he's a match of the day player, him. But that's just my opinion of him.
But what I'm saying is, I'm not saying he's, you know, he's in the same class as a Raheem Sterling or a Riyad Mahrez or, you know, a Sane.
Even a Jack Grealish.
You know what I mean?
Mm. But I think he's another priority, isn't he?
He's got pace, hasn't he? You know,
I mean,
but that lad at Wolves used to tether, you know, Traore used to tether us. There was no end problem.
Yeah, that's the point, Pete. Like, I think he's obviously a good player. And we were linked with him for a little bit before he went to City. But I don't think City will miss him. I genuinely don't. Like, I don't think he's key. I mean, the key players for City are De Bruyne, Foden, and Rodri, and obviously the Haaland up front. I suppose you could throw Kyle Walker into it, so that's half the team I've just named, isn't it? And I don't think Doku is in that class.
Don't forget the little rat Bernardo as well.
I mean, don't get me wrong, he's a good player, but I don't think he's integral to them. I think he's another player that looks good in highlights. He's obviously a good player, but I don't think he's of the class of those five that I named. I think Foden's bloody brilliant. It annoys me that you've got one of, if not the richest club in the world, and you get a talent like that coming through the academy. It's just unfair, that.
Well, it's ironic, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely brilliant. And, you know, fair play, the manager's obviously made him better as well. But he's hit form at the right time. And it's because of him that they haven't missed De Bruyne. But enough about them, sod them. The best thing about Sunday is that it's Anfield. This is the first time in any of these run-ins against them where we've been at Anfield in the run-in.
It's since 13-14.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we won that. The game after was the one that did it, wasn't it? But
we were a much better team then than they are now. And we're a much better team now than we were then.
I'm not sure about that, Liz. They're a better team now than they were then. Miles better.
I don't think so. Not with some
points
of the
wise, they are miles better.
Yeah, like, but I think, don't get me wrong, I think the difference is then they had Pellegrini as manager, and now they've got Pep.
And they had James Milner in that team in 13-14. They're not a better team than what they are now.
When James Milner come on at half time in that game,
he was the best player for them when he came on.
He actually changed the game.
He was brilliant.
You know what I mean? But don't forget, they had company. They had Yaya Toure, they had Aguero, they had Sterling. You know, they didn't have Sterling, then he was playing for us. But they still had a really, really good.
Oh, no, yeah, they did. But I still think that this team is better than that team. But, I mean, and I've said this numerous times, like De Bruyne, Christ, if we would have had him instead of them having him, we would have won the league rather than them a lot of the time. He's that good. But it is what it is. We're not a bad team, are we? Far from it. And I think the atmosphere at Anfield on Sunday has got the potential to be great. If we come out flying against them, it's going to be something to build. And I think
you've just touched on something there, Ben.
Yeah.
The atmosphere at Anfield on Sunday, I think everybody who goes to the game on Sunday should take a scarf with them.
Oh, 100%. And you know what, Les? This pisses me off.
Anybody, just let me finish a minute.
Yeah, go on.
And anybody who's not prepared to go in there and shout and sing and get right behind the lads from the first whistle to the last whistle of each half, right, please give your ticket to somebody else. And that's not me being disrespectful to anybody. But if you as Liverpool supporters are going to that game on Sunday and you're telling all your mates week in, week out, year in, year out, that you want to see Liverpool win the league on Sunday, it's time to show how much you want Liverpool to win the league. And you go in there and you do everything that you can as a fan, right, to get behind that team so that when you walk out, when the final whistle's blown, right, that you know that you give everything you can as a fan. And if ultimately that isn't good enough, then that's fair enough. But if you get right behind the players, as we've seen before, that will get the players on block, and it could be the difference between 3 points and
it's not so much what it does to our players, you know, it's what it does to them. I know that they're a brilliant team, but you just don't know what can happen to players in an atmosphere like that. But you're right, the thing about wearing a scarf does my head in. Right, I wear my scarf to the game for every game. And sometimes when you're walking into the cop, you feel like you're being looked at for wearing a scarf. It's weird the way the what's the word I'm looking for here? The opinion of...
If you wear a scarf, you're a wolf.
Yeah, right? And it's and like absolute mad. I can't go to the game without one. Like,
no, I always wear one. You know what I mean? Yeah. I know Pete Goodman, because that's more of a superstitious thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. But, well, he's in the main stand anyway, so he is.
Les, with the mafia in the main stand. We're not ultras with the mafia. Yeah. I haven't worn a scarf for years, but I do wear a Liverpool bobble hat. I wear colours like that.
You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, to me, there's nothing looks better when you look back at old pictures, whether that be 2005 against Chelsea, 2005 in Istanbul, you know, 2007 against Chelsea, you know, any time in the 70s and 80s, you know, the last day of the Cup. When you see that ground decked out in red and white, there's no better sight. And white people have this, you know, get this thing in the head about, oh, if you wear a scarf, you're a wolf. You're not. You're a supporter. Let people decide what they want to do. Yeah. But for certain games, let's just make the ground red. Mm. Let's just let see of red and white. Mm. And again, with the noise, just let's make and show everybody what the Cop is all about. And as I say, I don't know about you, Ben, but when I've looked at that new Anfield Road stand up at when it's been opened and they've been You Never Walk Alone has been played and the number of red and white scarves up there, it looks a tremendous sight from the Cop.
It's dead noisy as well, because I sit on the 18-yard line of the main stand and it's really noisy. It's not half added to the atmosphere.
Yeah.
And just
There's been a
the
few
other thing,
times, Pete, when they've started songs off as well, you know.
yeah. The other thing I'd also say is there've been better teams than Manchester City come to Anfield and have withered under the atmosphere. And the two I'm going to mention are obviously the Barcelona 4-0. But if you remember when Juventus came, when we beat them in the European Cup, and after the game, I think it was Del Piero who mentioned to, and he was talking to Ian Rush, I think, and he said, these are all hardened internationals who played for Juventus. He said for 25 minutes they froze because of the atmosphere. And as I say, their better sides, you can say what you want about City, about what they've won and that, but I'd class Juventus at that time and Barcelona as better sides than them. So if the
Chelsea,
crowd,
I wouldn't, but
five as well, Peace.
When
Mourinho and even Fat Frank admitted, that they couldn't hear themselves talk. Anyway,
and I know they're gonna do a coach welcome, aren't they? At 2 o'clock at the King Alley.
Right.
So they're starting at the King Harry at 2 o'clock all the way up to the ground. And
you know what, right? I hope to God they don't do anything stupid to the city.
That's what I was going to say.
Get behind
the lads.
Takes,
welcome the lads in. And when the city coach comes, keep it sane. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
By all means, get your pyros out, get your flags out, sing your heads off, but don't be lashing stuff, you know?
Mm.
Yeah. All right, lads. So on that note, I'll now ask you probably your hardest prediction of the season. So I'll start with you, Pete. What you're going for on Sunday?
3-1 Liverpool.
That was really positive, Ben.
Pete, I can't believe you went to Pete first. You absolutely stole me from there. That's exactly what I was going to say. But I'm going to go one step further. I think we'll go behind.
And then win 3-1.
Yeah.
Don't say that. Please.
I'm going.
Oh, you take it though, wouldn't you?
I'm going
for. You can guarantee it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going for the 2-0 Liverpool win, but it will be a late goal in the second half that will kill the game and give us the 3 points. So that's what I'm going for. And as long as we get the 3 points, I don't care how they come. But just get behind the team on Saturday. Sing your heart out from the first whistle to the last. Give your all. And you never know. That could be the difference between us getting the 3 points and not. On that note, we'll end this edition of the Leaf Flag. Thanks to Pete and Ben for joining me tonight. As you always end this podcast by saying, justice for the 97. Don't bite the sun. And you'll never walk alone. Until next time, goodbye.